This conference will.
Hello and welcome. This is Janet Rogers, your host for this Active Seniors in Transition Members Only conference call. You know that these monthly calls are for members only. They're part of Active Seniors in Transition's Inner Circle Club. And if you've ever listened in on conference calls before, you know they can become extremely distracting with background noises. But you won't hear those noises on this call because everyone's phones are muted automatically. And this makes for a much more pleasant call for everyone, including our guests. When the time comes for questions during this call, questions and answers, we'll ask you to submit your questions by email. The email that we'll be watching is questions@activeseniorsintransition.com. That's questions@activeseniorsintransition.com. That's really the best way for us to respond to your questions and comments because it allows us the opportunity to sort through and combine similar questions, and that happens a lot. The process works well for us, and the members seem to like it too. Now, you don't need to wait until the end of the call to email a question. If you have a question as you're listening to our guest, you can email that question just as you're thinking about it. The email address is, again, questions@activeseniorsintransition.com. And as you know, we record all of our calls. As a member of the Inner Circle Club, you can listen to this call and every call as often as you like and at any time that's convenient for you. Now, the reminders that you received during the past several weeks contain a link and password to that special section of our website that archives all of the monthly conference calls. Now, it is my extreme pleasure to introduce Joanne Rogovin. Joanne, as you know, is a licensed clinical social worker and the primary force behind Active Seniors in Transition. Joanne has devoted her professional life to helping people navigate change and make decisions that help them build more satisfying lives. She holds a BA in political science and history and an MS degree in communications from Boston University. After a successful corporate career, Joanne earned a master's in social work from Yeshiva University right here in New York. And she worked with a refugee resettlement agency, helping newly arrived immigrants adapt to life in New York City. In conjunction with her MSW, she studied at the Center for Modern Psychoanalytic Studies, honing her understanding of how to overcome barriers that prevent people from achieving their heart's desires. And as a member of the Active Seniors in Transition team, she uses her experience and commitment to helping seniors in their post-career phase of life find fulfillment, joy, and continuing surprises. Hello, Joanne.
Hello, Janet.
It's great to be here with you again, and I'm looking forward to hearing about our first guest.
Thank you. Our guest tonight is Sharon Bregman, founder of Deménagé, a firm that assists seniors in moving household. Sharon has a wonderful background. She is originally from Montreal, has a BA in physiological psychology and political science from McGill, and a master's in education also from McGill. After coming to New York, she worked in international sales and marketing for a startup, and then as a consultant to Fortune 500 companies. She then joined a large property management company overseeing apartments, hotels, and retail spaces. It was this last experience that Sharon really called upon to begin Deménagé, and helping seniors to relocate and redesign their lives. She's very active in community affairs. She's a member of the Rotary and involved in international projects like Gift of Life and literacy projects. She's a member of the Association of Senior Services, member of the National Association of Senior Move Managers, and a member of the Real Estate Board of New York and the Estate Planning Council of New York. So we have somebody with a great, great deal of experience. I invited Sharon to be on the call today specifically not only because she understands all the complexity and details of packing up and relocating, but because she is so sensitive to the emotional costs and trauma that often comes with this kind of change.
Thank you, Joanne. Goodness, this is great. Oh, Sharon, let's find out. Let's open the line for Sharon. Sharon, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good evening. How are you?
Absolutely fine and great. We can hear you too, and I'm looking forward to our conversation. Joanne shared a little of your background and mission with us.
So, Sharon, welcome to our members-only Active Seniors in Transition teleconference. I'm delighted that you could join us. So let's start off with talking about what kind of service you provide.
Primarily, I help seniors when they need to downsize out of their large homes or apartments into either an active adult living community, an independent living facility, an assisted living facility, or something more serious. I work not only with the seniors, but with their adult children, and I try to make the process as painless and as happy as is possible given the circumstances.
Well, I can imagine that this could be very disruptive and traumatic for everybody concerned. Could you give us some idea about that kind of trauma, about picking up and leaving all the familiar things?
Well, it's a difficult process not only for the senior, but for the adult children. So I think I would like to start by addressing why it's difficult for the children to help their parents. The children are, generally speaking, between the ages of 45 and 60. The seniors tend to be between late 60s and late 80s. These are the types of families I work with. And frequently, the home that the senior is moving from is the home that the adult child spent a great deal of time growing up in, if not from early years, frequently from at least high school through college. And as a result, this home holds a treasure trove of memorabilia and memories. And it's the type of thing that we as parents all wind up with in our house. If it's a son, it could be sports trophies or athletic letters or hockey sticks. There are yearbooks and prom dresses and wedding gowns and everything that you want to keep but that you don't want to keep in your house is kind of the obligation of the parent to hold on for this, to this for you. So to finally have to deal with these things that you know had a safe place, but you really have no place for them in your own home, is one of the first hurdles for the adult children. Another hurdle for the adult children is the fact that their parents or their parent is not extremely happy about the fact that they need to move out of their comfortable environment filled with memories. And so there is friction. The adult children also have lives, jobs, children. And to take a chunk of time and to go through a difficult process, not only for yourself, but for your parent, is emotionally draining, it's time-consuming, it leads to uncalled-for arguments. One sibling tends to step up to the plate more so than others, and the whole thing becomes an unbalanced situation within the household. From the senior's perspective, the difficulty lies in the fact that most of my clients tend to be single seniors. They've lost their spouse somewhere along the way. They've managed to stay in the home. And then one day, either because their children have encouraged them to move out because they're worried, or because something has happened to the senior that has scared them, they make this decision that they're going to move. But everything that is inside the house is comfortable and familiar to them, and their external surroundings are comfortable and familiar to them. Their doctors, their friends, the newspaper boy, they know where the stairs are. They know their way around the community. Walking through the house, they know where the light switches are. These are all things we take for granted, but when you have to get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, you know if you have to go left or right. Sometimes I'm disoriented when I travel a lot and I'm in a hotel room and I get out of the wrong side of the bed. So These are some of the situations that the seniors are faced with and the little emotional hurdles that they need to get over. And what I try to do to deflect the stress and the negativity is talk about the positive side of moving, the new adventure, the new friends, the new socialization, a whole new realm of activities, the fact that people don't have to cook dinner for themselves anymore, that you can have company where everybody is in the same boat. People embrace each other in these senior living communities because they all have the shared experience of having to move to one. So I try to really steer the attitude towards that positiveness, and I try to get the adult children to deal with their memorabilia in a more pleasant way than a negative way. Those are some of the big hurdles that I face when I walk into a situation where a senior is now ready to move.
I'd like to just follow up on this whole idea of our treasures, you know, our memorabilia and so on. So here I have, you know, in my family's home, as you said, the yearbooks and the pictures from the trips and just a treasure trove of things. What advice do you give to the adult children about how to sort through that, manage it, make decisions about what to keep and what not to keep?
Okay, that's a really good question. What I really like to do first before I deal with the children is deal with the parent, the parent or the parents, which is not generally speaking the case. And it's most important that this senior has something from their home that makes them feel very comfortable in their new living situation. So we cherry pick the most important things for the senior, artwork, specific pieces of furniture, a special blanket. I recently moved an 87-year-old gentleman out of a very large home. His wife had died 3 years ago, and he had a king-size headboard. We cut it down to queen-size just so he felt that he was getting into the same bed at night. He had a lot of art. It was all very important to him. Literally, we took it all, and his new house is like a museum. There were 6 pieces of important furniture. There was some needlepoint pillows that his late wife had made. Those were his big treasures. The house was filled with photographs and trophies. There were 3 sons and a daughter, so you can just imagine the amount of stuff in this house. Plus, they entertained a lot when his wife was alive, so they had china and crystal and all kinds of things. The children were not dealing 100%, but once the father had figured out what he was taking and what would fit in the apartment, because we went over to his new independent living facility to measure and figure out how large the closets were and everything else. Then after many phone calls to the children, one son in California said that he would gladly take anything that pertained to entertaining. So that was all the china and the crystal. We packed up, I believe, 12 or 13 cartons of his books that were still in the dad's house. Mm-hmm. Photo albums went to another child. A specific piece of furniture went to a grandson. Actually, the grandson is in college, and so that piece of furniture went to storage. And little by little, once we knew what the father was taking, we dealt with the rest of it. This was an unusual case because this particular senior gentleman stayed in the home right up to the day of moving. Most of the time, the seniors will go and visit a child or go on vacation or go someplace else, because while their house is being dismantled, they become very upset.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to mark or notate what is being moved for the senior. There are many conversations with the children prior to this big move, and I try to encourage them to take all of the important things vis-a-vis nostalgia, and also the important things, the expensive things that they can deal with later, but if they were to dispose of them now, in 6 months they may or may not be upset. So why take the chance? These senior moves generally happen quickly. The senior is originally not inclined to move. The children may be encouraging them, please go look at this place, let me take you to go look at that place. Or one day the senior might have a little slip and fall or bump into the wall or realize that, you know, I almost caught the kitchen on fire and perhaps it really is time for me to go someplace. All of my friends have moved. There's nobody here for me to talk to. And so on the spur of the moment, they will go and visit an independent living facility and buy in or sign a lease or whatever it is that the circumstance is. And then they announce to their children, guess what? I'm moving. And honestly, that is how it happens. So the children at this point are really not prepared to deal with the memorabilia and the important stuff. Mm-hmm. And that is why I do encourage them to take as much as they possibly can. And even if they need to store it in a garage or a basement for a couple of months, they need to digest that they need to deal with this stuff. And so I try to get the senior to go on a vacation or to go visit a child or a grandchild. And if I can possibly get this coordinated and everybody is on the same page, I will have the moving company simultaneously pack the senior's portion of the move and pack various other portions for different children or different grandchildren. It eliminates unnecessary time and expense, and it all leaves simultaneously in multiple directions. I follow the stuff that goes to the senior's new home, and I'm there to help set up the new home. So that's all in place. And then I do get calls a few months later from the kids saying, thank you for making me take such and such, or I'm really glad that I have this because my daughter all of a sudden wants it. It's always easy to get rid of things, but it's impossible to retrieve them once you've disposed of them.
Those are very important concepts for people to understand. It may be very tempting to just unclutter everything, but I'm sure that there are those kinds of regrets. You said a couple of things I just want to recap, that there are some catalysts why people decide that they're going to move or their adult children want them to move, that they're lonely, that their partner is no longer in the house, that their children are worried about their safety, you know, about them falling, about setting the kitchen on fire, or they have trouble with the stairs, or they've had a medical scare or a fall. And so all of these, for our listeners, are really good things to pay attention to and to be aware of, that these may be signs that it's time to either have the conversation with a parent or encourage them to look elsewhere, et cetera. So thank you for pointing those up. I want you to go back to something else. In addition to this idea about memorabilia and about the memories, and hopefully they're happy memories in this home and so on, there are some other things going on when we have to start dealing with our adult parents and with our parents, rather, as adults, and start parenting our parents. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what goes on emotionally for the adult children, for our members, as they face this.
They go through a whole realm of emotions, and I've seen a very broad spectrum. I see children that are completely relieved and almost elated that their parent is now going to be someplace where they no longer need to worry. I had a client who was so upset. Her mother's health was failing. Her father was devoting his life to taking care of this ailing mother. And the daughter was so torn. She didn't know who to support. The mother did not want to move. The father wanted to move so badly that he actually bought into an independent living facility a resort-like independent living facility, and now he could not get his wife to move. This daughter wanted to confront her mother because she didn't want her father to also become ill, stressing over the mother. And once I worked out a way to get the mother to move without knowing that she was moving, the daughter was relieved. Now she could sleep at night and she knew that her dad was going to be okay and her mother would get used to this idea. But it had the potential of being a very confrontational situation. And I actually did work with a generational counselor to find a way to get this mother onto an airplane and out of her house so that she would not have a fit on the airplane. The children are really all over the place, and I think that one of the things that I bring to the picture is the fact that they don't actually need to deal with it hands-on. They're kind of doing an arm's-length transaction, and they know that their parent or parents are going to be well taken care of during this transition, so they don't have the additional stress of living their lives, taking care of their children, and tearing themselves away from that to go and be someplace else. It's the almost impossible factor of being in two places at one time and taking care of three or four people at one time that is very stressful for the adult child. The adult child can pretty much cope with the rest of it, and the ones that haven't quite grown up enough to deal with their stuff, we just ship the stuff to them, and they'll get around to dealing with it eventually.
Okay.
It's the best I can do.
Of course, of course. But I think that the way you approach things and the counseling that you give to people as they're going through this is far and away different than just having a moving company come in. And it's also, it's hard, of course, for our listeners to see their parents aging and diminishing, and so that's all. It's a very emotional part too.
I spend a great deal of time on the phone with the adult children, telling them how wonderful this is going to be for their parents, and how happy their parents are going to be, and how relieved they're going to be. And I go and I check out the facility that I'm moving these people to, and I get the floor plans, and I try to meet a couple of the residents. I really try to put the most positive spin on this that you can imagine. And I can do it with a clear conscience simply because I did it with my adult mother. She was 84 years old and was having difficulty driving at night. And she lived quite a distance away from her friends. She was a single woman at this point, you know, a widow. And she was becoming more and more isolated, because she was really grounded every night of her life. And once I convinced her that being with other people was a safer bet, she went and investigated it. And, of course, I got from my mother the same comment that everybody gets from their parents. I don't want to live there. Everybody there is old. which I guess I'm going to say one day also, but you know, they know that they're not exactly infants anymore, but when you look at a residence and everybody there is 70-plus, you somehow just don't want to accept that you need to be there. I try to get them to the point where they think that they actually want to be there. And one thing that I would really like to encourage the adult children to do, once your parents have moved into a senior community, or even before they have moved into a senior community, these places are open and they invite you for dinner. The seniors can actually have a sleepover. They all have guest facilities, and they can give it a little trial. It would be a good idea to join your parent for a pre-move-in meal, and if you haven't done that, you should try to get in there and have dinner with them within the first week of their moving in. It's scary. People are shy. And children of all ages are a wonderful icebreaker. We use our little kids in kindergarten to meet new friends in new neighborhoods. Why shouldn't the senior use their adult child as an icebreaker? I did this with my mother. I flew down to Florida after she had moved in. I think she was there 4 or 5 nights, and I could hear a certain trepidation in her voice. And I went to dinner. And dinner is, you know, in a main dining room in all of these places. They're all very similar. You sit at a table with other people. And my mother was just sitting there like a quiet little mouse, and I had never seen her that way in her life because I had always seen her with friends that she knew. And I started going around the table asking people what their names were, where they came from, how long they'd been living here, why they picked this place, what did they do. And as they started talking about the activities that they enjoyed, several were things that my mother enjoyed doing. And before the end of dinner, she had been invited to join a Mahjong group and to come to a book reading club and, you know, to come to the theater outing and to take the walk. And they just have everything in these places. But you need a little encouragement, and you need somebody to sort of take the edge off of saying, hi, my name is so-and-so, and I'm new here, because it's scary. So that is my advice to the adult children, to help their parents. And once their parents get involved in this new community, they are some of the most happy seniors I have encountered. They find new energy, new activities, new companions. They're laughing, they're sharing stories, they all pull out pictures of their grandchildren. It's not like the nursing homes of old. These independent adult living communities are really high energy places, even though people are pushing walkers.
Okay, let's talk. I want to get into some details for our members about exactly what you do when you're called on. First of all, it sounds as though the adult children are your usual contacts.
They are, generally speaking, my primary contact, or my initial contact. On occasion, the senior actually calls me. It all depends how I am found. Sometimes the senior is referred to me by their financial advisor or their attorney or somebody that knows me that provides other professional services to them. Mm-hmm. But more frequently, it is the adult child that finds me.
Okay. So tell us in some more detail about how you work. How do you get started? Obviously, you need to partner with movers and appraisers and so on. Could you give us some details about how you work?
Well, the first thing I do is I like to have an initial meeting with the senior or the seniors, and I will go to their home. I will sit and talk with them. I kind of get a feel for their personality. Sometimes the adult child is there. More often than not, the adult child is not there. We walk around the house. We talk about where they're going. I just get like a first broad stroke feel for what is important. They know. Seniors are very intelligent. There's nothing wrong with their thinking abilities. It's just the trauma of moving, and moving is not fun for anybody, and it's less fun for them because they just keep saying, well, how am I going to do this at my age? But we walk around and we look at things, and I give them a 7-page typewritten list. Most of the time, these seniors have not moved in 20-plus years, and life has changed. And it covers all of the things that they need to do slowly. It tells them how to deal with all the services, turning things off in their home, how to change addresses, how to notify all of their service providers, whether it's their doctors or their lawyers or the people that deliver the newspapers, the IRS, their pension checks, anything that comes to them in the mail that needs to be redirected, or automatic charges for the house, such as Cablevision being automatically charged to a credit card once a month. Everything needs to be done, but it needs to be done slowly, or it's too overwhelming. So with this overkill checklist, I advise them to read it and to make a little mark next to what applies to them, and slowly but surely, over the course of 3 or 4 weeks, start making all of these notifications and preparing themselves. I even go so far as talking about, you know, start planning your meals so you use up the food in the freezer. I mean, all these things sound logical, but when you're in the midst of a move, people forget to empty out their safety deposit boxes or to get their clothing from the dry cleaners. So that's all in this ridiculous list that I hand off. And then we talk about, depending upon the type of things in their house, some people have a lot of very fragile, breakable things that are very important to them that need to come along with the curio cabinets. Other people have different types of things. So I can now judge what type of a moving company I need to bring in. And I will then make an appointment with at least 2 moving companies to come and meet me at this house to prepare an estimate. I like estimates to be as close as possible to actual costs so that there are no surprises for anybody at the end of the day. And then, you know, the client, the senior, picks the moving company that they're most comfortable with. Frequently they say, well, I can't tell, and both of these estimates are about the same. Who would you recommend? And I generally have a feel. Every job is different, and when the mover walks in originally, sometimes it just clicks and sometimes it doesn't. And even though I may call the same companies for various jobs, sometimes they're the right one for this job but not the right one for the next one. Now, the next step would be to figure out what to take for the senior. And if the senior is not going to be there while the actual packing is going on, I don't necessarily want to segregate the stuff. I am very capable of putting it all down on a list, service for 4 of these dishes, but we need 8 teaspoons. I want this clothing, but not that clothing. If people are moving to Florida, I need to give them some guidance as to what kind of a wardrobe would be appropriate. And so I make all of my notes, and I know what is getting packed up for the senior. Then the next step would be to reach out to the children to see what they want from the house or what it is I'm going to try to make them take from the house. And what about the grandchildren and who's going to get the sterling silver, and does anybody want the chandelier? So this is a process, and I start making lists and I gather up addresses. And when it's actually time for the packing, I will photograph the house, especially if there's a lot of art, as my gentleman that I moved had an enormous amount of art, and every work of art was individually photographed and numbered so that when it was time to hang it, we knew which box to open, because you don't want to damage art. So I take photographs when applicable to document condition and to inventory things by number. And then when the movers do come, I, with an assistant if need be, will stand there while the movers pack, and we will make inventory lists of what went into the box. The box will be closed up. We will number that box, and that number will be on the inventory list. So we know exactly what is where. Once everything is shipped out to the senior, to the children, to the grandchildren, I arrive at the destination of where the senior's stuff went, and I will help them unload. I will help them unpack if that's part of what they have hired me for. We check off to make sure that all the boxes have arrived. And then if it is a private home and not an apartment or something, and there's still stuff left in this house, I can help sell it. If it's, you know, if there's a lot of beautiful things left, I have a way of selling things through dealers and collectors. And if it's just what I would call regular household things that are left, you know, a lot of kitchen stuff, hoses, lawn furniture, TVs, you know, I have a woman that I refer to. She comes in and does a very thorough tag sale. She can sell, you know, hundreds of books. I mean, all the stuff that is left over, the LP records that nobody's going to play anymore, and the cassette tapes and the equipment. The only thing I discourage people from selling are computers, because I think hard drives need to be destroyed. After the tag sale takes place, there is usually some degree of garbage left, and so I will show up at the house to collect the money from the tag sale woman and to meet a garbage company. They will come and take away whatever's left. Garbage is paid for by the cubic yard, so the tag sale does eliminate volumes of garbage. And then if the house is not sold, I will bring in a cleaning company and have it scrubbed from floor to ceiling so that it shows beautifully, and then I turn it over to a realtor. many times I'm asked to pre-screen realtors, and I do have the ability to do that quite well, and I will bring in two or three realtors from two or three different brokerage companies in the area, and I will screen them, and I will question them, and I will point everything out, and they will then make the presentation either to the senior or to the senior's adult children. Sometimes this process with the realtors takes place at the front end and not the back end. It just depends on the situation. But that is an overview of the process. I mean, there are very, you know, fine points, and different people do want different things, and they want help with different degrees of detail, or not necessarily the whole program. It's mm-hmm. kind of a pick or choose menu.
So, first of all, it's clear that you have thought of and covered everything I could possibly think of and more when it comes to this sort of process, and that you customize what you do for each of your clients. The situations you've been talking about people moving into independent living, et cetera, moving into their own place, it's all very positive. Can you talk a little bit about what happens when somebody moves into assisted living? I remember our conversation, and you talked about how different that is.
That's very different, and there's no way around it. It is sad. When somebody needs to move into assisted living, it could be because they have been aging in place in their home, perhaps with an aide, perhaps with some mechanical adjustments to the house like ramps or chairlift or moving the upstairs bedroom downstairs, but somehow they've been able to stay in their home. The day comes when they can no longer stay in their home and they need to go to assisted living. Assisted living is more like a hotel room or a very large hospital room, and what you take with you is not a lot, a bureau, a lamp, maybe a TV, a picture or two for the walls, maybe some photographs, an afghan, a little bit of clothing. And the mindset is definitely not happy, because this is really an end game process. And it's my responsibility to take the load off of the adult children and to make the senior feel comfortable and well taken care of. And in this situation, I do stress the fact that they will have good care, good attention. We're talking about things like diaper changes and being fed meals and being given medication in a timely, kindly, clean environment. And so that's what I stress, that they don't need to worry about the aide not being able to give them an injection or the visiting nurse not showing up on time or somebody not remembering to bring them a hot meal for dinner. So I focus more on the positive side of the great care that they're going to be getting. And I assure the adult children that their parents are now in really good hands, and getting better care in this facility than they could get at home. And it's not even a question of how much money you have. You cannot bring this type of attention into your home. You cannot house three or four people so that you have somebody on call 24 hours a day. And these other types of aides that come in on three shifts a day don't have the medical expertise or quite the same level of caregiving. So that's really what I try to stress when we have to go to that type of a situation. And then, of course, the whole house needs to be dismantled, and that's a whole other process that's more like an estate closing, and I do those. And it's a different ball game, but it follows very much along the same lines as downsized.
Okay. You just talked about the fact that for most of us, we wouldn't have either the room or the ability to house a team of aides to take care of an aging parent. But we haven't talked about what happens, what the issues are when a parent moves in with adult children and often with grandchildren. Many of our members may be in that situation or contemplating it for emotional, financial reasons, any number of reasons. Do you have any words of wisdom for us about that situation?
I have come across one situation like that very recently. There was a lovely woman aging in place in her apartment in Manhattan, and she was suffering from dementia, and it got to the point where it was just not safe for her to live by herself. The children got together and nominated one of the sisters as the person to take their mother in. I don't think that she was thrilled with the decision, she being the adult child, but this is what the family voted on, and so she brought her mother to her home, and the mother is pretty much ensconced in a bedroom on an upstairs level in this house, and it is, at first it was working fairly well. The mother has since deteriorated, and it is becoming a terrible emotional drain on this family. There are teenage children. This adult daughter works and doesn't know where to turn to for 5 minutes of peace because there's an aide there during the daytime. When she comes home from work, the aide goes off. They are not bringing in 24-hour care. It becomes her responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I did find a place. There are, you know, places where people live full-time with Alzheimer's or dementia. There are certain residences that are geared. Potomac Homes is one such place. There is a Potomac Homes in Bergen County, and they actually will take somebody in for a weekend just so that the family members can have a bit of free time.
Mm-hmm.
So I told her about this place, and they also do daycare for seniors with dementia, which becomes quite complicated now because you're talking about special vehicles to transport people back and forth. But this particular woman has actually availed herself of the three-day stay and has put her mother in just so that she could have some breathing space and maybe get ready for the holidays or just be able to deal with her children or a birthday or something where she needed some freedom. The other two sisters do not help at all. And one of the realities of families is the fact that the job of caring for an aging parent generally falls to one child. The others have reasons why they can't do it. It's not fair, but life isn't fair, and maybe it's best for the senior that this one child who is the more giving is the one that is the most responsible. There is no amount of compensation or thank you that you can give to the child who steps up to the plate. And hopefully that what they're really getting is some sense of satisfaction and ultimately very good closure.
You know, you bring up an important point, and in a future call, we're going to be talking with somebody who is particularly focused on how do caregivers care for themselves, and how do the adult children of aging seniors, aging parents, stay sane while they're dealing with so many of these issues. I want to switch gears for a moment because I know we want to give our listeners, our members, a chance to ask some questions. But I know that you're based in the New York metropolitan area. How can our members find somebody like you where they live, and what should they look for in an elder relocation expert?
Okay. This whole senior-focused industry is something new. All these industries focusing on seniors is something quite new. And there is the National Association of Senior Move Managers, and you can find them online. It's NASMM, N-A-S-M-M. They have people like me in various parts of the country. Now, I'm not quite sure that we all function the same way. We all have our individual businesses. I know that to be a member of NASMM, you must have insurance. You must have a website. You must be a real company. You have to have real references. You have to have done some work. Not all senior move managers do the emotional part of the service that I do. Some of them actually do the packing and the moving, and they are literally movers who cater to seniors. So when you find a person who says they are a senior move manager, you really need to speak to several families that they have moved. And you have to make sure that you're actually speaking to somebody that was a real client and not just a friend giving them a reference. And it's very important that you gear your questions to eliciting the types of information that somebody that's actually gone through the process would have answers to. You never want to ask somebody a yes or no question. You want to make sure that whoever it is you are hiring has insurance and will provide a certificate of insurance if you ask them for one. You need to know that any third-party vendors that they bring in, like moving companies, that these people are licensed and that there are nothing in the way of collusion going on. Kickbacks are something that you can't really test for, but if your senior move manager is going to bring in several moving companies, chances are she or he has no strong affiliation. You want somebody that doesn't have single source providers because it's not clean. Really try to find somebody that is open and has experience, that has good references, that belongs to an association that's accredited. There are accreditations today that people can get. Senior advisors, there's mm-hmm. a whole realm of letters that come after people's names today, and that means that they've been trained in a way to handle seniors, because seniors need to be handled gently. But the truth of the matter is, seniors need to be handled the way anybody else needs to be handled, with respect and kindness and consideration and thoughtfulness.
Well, Joanne, if I might interrupt for a moment,
please.
Several members have sent questions via our email address, and I was wondering if Sharon might respond to them now.
I think that's a great idea. Is that okay with you, Sharon?
That's fine, certainly.
Good.
Wonderful. Here's the first question. It's from Bob from Carlisle, Pennsylvania, and he writes, I've been thinking about this type of service for my dad who lives alone and is struggling, and I think he needs to be in assisted living. But I've had a hard time taking action to get the process moving, as I know he will feel offended if I hire someone like you to help him. Any suggestions?
Yes. I think the first thing is that he should have a real heart-to-heart talk with his father about why he feels his father should move from whatever living situation he's currently in. Point out the positive aspects of what a move of this type would be and none of the negatives as to why he needs to move. Talk about your concern for his well-being because he's alone and you're frightened, not the fact that he should be frightened. Kind of put the shoe on the other foot. And there are places that have social workers that speak to seniors to help get the message across. And he might want to call upon such a place and to help him address this subject initially with his father. Because if it's addressed properly, the senior will see the upside of such a transition.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Here's another question from Betty from San Bernardino, California. And she asks, do you assist in making the decision of what level of care the senior may need as far as assisted living is concerned?
No, I don't. I'm not a doctor. There are a lot of places that could help make such a diagnosis. First of all, before you go and move into an independent living facility, they have a questionnaire that you need to fill out, and they give you some kind of a physical. A really qualified independent living facility will not take somebody in if they really feel that this person should be in assisted living. Once you're in independent living, from what I understand, many of them transition to assisted living within the compound. Other places will let you have an aide live with you in independent living, and they make provisions for you to be cared for in independent living. But you can't get in there initially if you are beyond the health measures that they have. So the facilities themselves really provide a kind of a triage process.
That is good to know. And I have another question. Here's from Mark in Dedham, Massachusetts. He asks, what suggestions do you have for dealing with irreconcilable differences between the parents and the adult children?
Okay. That's a good question. There are people that specialize in this type of help. There are social workers and geriatric, I don't want to say psychiatrists, but more like
counselors or psychologists.
Counselors, psychologists. And this is a very common problem. I know that right here in New Jersey, there is a place called Generations, and they provide a service like that. I don't know how you would find them in different states, but I know that through this Association of Senior Services that I belong to, there are two such parties. One is an individual psychologist, one is a firm, and they have everything from aides to social workers, and they deal with a whole realm of family situations. And I would be happy to refer your client or this gentleman asking the question to such a facility, because they know where all the other ones are throughout the country. Once you find a good provider for senior services, they can generally direct you to people within other states that provide similar services.
Okay. What do you think? Here's one from Stephanie in Spokane, Washington. She says she's the oldest adult child in the family and wants to know how to deal with her siblings who refuse to see or acknowledge the indicators that it's time for mom and dad to move.
Well, how do mom and dad feel about it? Has she spoken with them? Do they feel it's time to move? And why? I think the most important thing is, why are the younger children not dealing with it? Generally speaking, this is an assumption, it's because they don't want to imagine that their parents are getting to the point where they're one day going to pass on and there'll be no more parents around. Maybe they don't have children themselves yet, and so they don't understand the importance of preparing your children for the day that one day you're not going to be here anymore. Nobody wants to imagine that their parents are going to leave this world. And the children who are in denial about parents needing help are probably children that need to, without being too harsh, grow up and understand that you can't pretend that nothing is going on. And this is a reality check, and I don't know how she will specifically deal with her siblings. I think the fact that she's aware that something needs to be done, it sounds like she's the person that's going to have to do it. And that, as I said earlier this evening, it generally falls to one child to take care of the situation.
Janet, I think we've had some wonderful questions. And Sharon, I just want to thank you once again for being on this monthly conference call. I hope you'll come back and visit us again. And Janet, could you remind our members about how they can learn more about how to listen to our calls and so on?
Absolutely, and thank you too, Sharon. That was great. I was just going to say, Joanne, that I love this call because I particularly like what Sharon pointed out about trying to convince the adult children not to be hasty in throwing things away, everything out all at the same time.
I did too, and I love the hint that you gave us, Sharon, about acting as an icebreaker for a parent moving into a new situation. It's something I would never have thought of, and of course it makes perfect sense, and it's a wonderful and generous act. And I'm sure that it's enormously helpful and that the parent is so grateful.
Well, thank you. And I will tell you, sometimes when there are no children, I go and do it.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, it's obvious that this is a labor of love for you and that you have a real passion for it. So thank you again for sharing all of that with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. And in closing, I just want to remind our members that we record all of our calls, and this one in as well. And as a member of the Inner Circle Club, you can listen to this call and every call as often as you like and at any time that's convenient for you. The email reminders that you've received during the last week contain a link and password to that section of our website that contains all of the monthly conference calls. Now, it will take a couple of days for us to post this conference call, but it will be posted online within the next day or two. Let's see. As you know, our calls are the second Tuesday of each month at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, and 5 p.m. Pacific Coast Time. And we will send you reminders, of course, but definitely mark that on your calendar. And Joanne, before the call, you asked me to remind our members about, I think it was...
Oh, yes. I wanted to remind our members to visit our blog at activeseniorsintransition.com. We hope you'll come to the blog site often and comment on what we have written there and the information that we have gleaned from experts for you. And, of course, if you have ideas for guests or topics for us to cover on our conference call, please share them with me. Just send an email to me at Joanne, that's J-O-A-N-N-E, at activeseniorsintransition.com. So, again, let me thank Sharon. And for those of you who might want more information about how she works and what she does, let me give you her email address. It's Sharon, S-H-A-R-O-N, at 360 Deménager. I'll spell that, DEMENAGER.com. And Sharon told me that is French for moving and moving on. So it's Sharon at 360deménager.com. And I'd like to thank all of you for listening and leave you with a thought that I found that I think is so appropriate for tonight's discussion. It comes from the playwright Oliver Goldsmith, who said, and I quote, "I love everything that's old. Old friends, old times, old manners, old books, old wine." Thank you for being with us.